Welcome to the Glasgow Short Film Festival 2021 podcast. I'm Sana Yahul, the festival's co-director, and on behalf of our entire team, thank you for listening. Named in honour of one of Scotland's greatest filmmakers, the Bill Douglas Award for International Short Film was inaugurated at GSFF in 2012 by Bill's lifelong friend and collaborator, Peter Jewell. Each year, a jury of filmmakers and film curators chooses a film from our international selection that best reflects the qualities found in the work of Bill Douglas: honesty, formal innovation, and the supremacy of image and sound in cinematic storytelling. To celebrate the award's 10th anniversary this year, we checked in with all previous winners. In this episode, we present a conversation between British filmmaker Anwar Boulifa, who won the 2016 Bill Douglas Award with his film A Short Guide to Reentry, and one of that year's jury members, Ona Falby, UK producer and founder of Life to Live Films. A Short Guide to Reentry tells the story of Khalid, who has just been released from prison. He is told he needs a job and a place in the community, but finds that fitting in isn't always that easy. You can watch A Short Guide to Reentry on our screening platform during the entire festival week, along with all other previous Bill Douglas Award winners. And now, enjoy the episode, and hopefully see you online at GSFF 21.
Have you got a job to go out to?
One way of breaking the cycle.
Do you have somewhere to live?
Is change and deciding what you want.
You've got a job to go out to.
And where you want to be.
Do you have somewhere to live?
Now, instead of running against the tide, you want to go with the tide. Does that make more sense than
you? Oops, accident.
The jury that year, there were three of us. And of course, this was a few years ago, but my memory was actually we came to quite a quick consensus on your film. I think there's something that's just very real and very touching about your film. You know, it was an emotional film, but also it was a bit of a conversation maker. You know, it raises questions and encourages debate and all that kind of thing. So I think it was a unanimous decision. I guess the film itself is, it's almost documentary-like, I would say, in that it felt very real. Yeah, I just wondered if you wanted to talk a little bit, you know, about your intentions and your feelings and how you felt then versus how you feel now with those questions, I guess.
Yeah, I think with the first one, with this style of the film, it does have that kind of like documentary, almost like immediate style, that you feel like you're there, like you're like a fly on the wall, especially in the workshop scenes where the central character, Khalid, he's attending these almost like self-improvement workshops, which was quite funny because the title of the film, A Short Guide to Reentry, it comes from like a kind of like manual that the ex-offenders are given upon their release, which is a kind of almost like A to Z guide of, you know, how to become a model citizen within society, you know, like with like really basic questions like, you know, how to find a job, how to find work, like what to do, which on the surface sound like really easy things to do. But when you don't have the skill set or like cultural capital to kind of like succeed in the workplace, it becomes almost like burden that you carry. So some of that I found like through like independent research, especially coming from a like documentary background. So I was quite used to investigating issues.
I mean, were they all, was it a real workshop? Was that a real workshop giving gut? I mean, it felt so natural and it felt really improvised. I wondered how much of that was scripted and how much was improvised.
It was weird. The actual location, the office space that I filmed in, is actually a real place where like young offenders like go and they kind of like, you know, take part in like kind of like CV workshops and things. the cast were like made of a mixture between like actors and non-actors. So first timers. So people that had kind of like experienced or been close to that type of situation. So I went in there with a script, but I was quite open to them like bringing their experience to the fore. And I mean, as a filmmaker, I'm quite open to like assessing the energy or the vibe or what's going on and really feeding off that. And I could really sense there was something going on. There was a kind of like lot of frustration and a lot of anger. At the start, I gave them a few lines of the script and it didn't really fit well. It felt a bit forced. And then when I said, you know, say the line or talk about the issue, like in your own words or express yourself, then all of a sudden it was like fireworks. You know, everyone was, you know, had something to say, or they were arguing, or people were arguing amongst themselves, and it like generated this really organic debate. And so I adapted my style where I told the like DP just to kind of like, you know, whiz around and like capture this energy, this vibe that they're all kind of like almost like riffing off each other. So I abandoned my plans quickly and just like adapted to what was happening, which was like really exciting, because like as a director, you're almost like a viewer where you want to be surprised about, you know, what's the next turning point. So
yeah, how did you, do you want to talk about how you worked with your DP to was it leaving your DP to instinct, or did you have to get people to repeat and start again? How did you work with the DP to get what you wanted?
I think my DP kind of like felt that energy, and then I just instructed her just to have more of a kind of like loose style where, you know, I wanted to kind of observe the events, but just scan the room and just like focus more on instinct of, you know, where you should be or what you should focus on, rather than setting everything up for the camera. You know, the camera should just almost be observing what's happening, or, you know, what the energy is. And it's almost like wildlife, kind of, you're just like picking stuff out from that. And it just like really suited the style of the film. It's like, because it was a low budget film, I kind of like made it with my own funds. It just really suited the aesthetic. The aesthetic suited the subject matter, because like before I thought, oh, you know, I didn't go like intentionally with that style. The style was a product of like the circumstances or the subject matter. You know, it wasn't like, you know, fake gritty realism just for fake gritty realism. It was because of actually the film, as you said, is a conversation piece.
Yeah, or heavy-handed. I didn't feel like you were being heavy-handed with it. So just riffing on your budget issues and the restrictions, what were your biggest challenges on that budget? What did you shoot on, by the way? What was your camera?
I shot on the video. I can't remember. It was like Sony. It might have been Sony Red, or was it Sony F5 or... It was quite a long time ago, but I remember it was like I was getting a deal from like Panavision, like some like really cheap deal, because they wouldn't give me the Alexa at the time. But I mean, there's something exciting about making a film with a small budget that you use the circumstances to your advantage. You know, it was fun because you could like improvise. I remember like shooting at the prison. We had like one day to shoot there, and you know, we had to stop halfway through the day because it was, I think it was the first day of spring, and there was a kind of like a fight. There was like a riot like in the prison, and we were locked in the kitchen for like 3 or 4 hours until everything was like safe to go back out. And then it was like, oh, we've got like 2 hours to film now. So
not an insurable event, I guess, on that kind of film.
It was quite like guerrilla style filmmaking where you were just, yeah, it was just like run and gun, like everything at the time, which was fun, but it added to like an energy and authenticity.
It did, yeah. And did you have to pay your cast, or were they volunteers, or how did that work?
Yeah, I paid them, because I think like your cast always has to be paid, regardless of if it's a complete like no budget film. Then I paid them like a nominal fee to be in the film, and obviously expenses, and I would try and pay the crew as well. I think the only person that wasn't paid was myself. Some form, but
there you go, you got paid with the recognition.
Yeah, I got paid with the recognition. Obviously, I opened store.
It go to many festivals.
Yeah, it did. I think it actually took a while for it to like build up a head of steam. So I remember like initially like submitting like to festivals and getting quite a few rejections, but then you realize it's not because your film's bad, it's just because everyone has different tastes and different sensibilities and different political viewpoints, you know.
Absolutely. And it doesn't necessarily fit into the curated program that you have. But the other thing anyway, I think with I would say pretty much, I can't say all films, but most short films have a good 6, 7, 8, 9 months of not being picked up. Then they get picked up, and then you get your year's festival life, I think.
Yeah, because I think from Glasgow, we went to like Palm Springs, and then we went to like a few more film festivals. So it started to like travel around. I went to some small film festival in Ukraine, and I just remember getting the bus from Poland and going across the border, but feeling really sick and just puking everywhere.
So that short film where you had very little, or you didn't know what your expectations were, but it looks like it fed into lots of exciting things afterwards. So can you tell us a bit what's happened since?
I wrote like a feature film that I was working on for 3 or 4 years on the Cine Fondation, and I developed that with producer Bertrand Favre at the Bureau. We were set to go into production just before COVID. We're going to like prep as well, so that was going to be funded by the BBC and BFI.
Do you find that quite frustrating that after all that work you have to hand it over and it's down to so many factors? Does it feel a bit out of your control at that point?
Like when you make a short film, or when I made my short film, I turned it over quite quickly. So I wrote it and I shot it within the 6 months. But when you make a feature film, or when you're kind of like writing for a feature film, there's a lot of like roadblocks ahead, and it can be a variety of things. It can be, you know, you finding a story that works, or, you know, like funders coming back with notes, or like commissioners, or, you know, even finding a producer to, you know, to take the project on board. And everything just takes a long time. And obviously in that process, like from when you've written the script, you kind of like change as well. So you evolve over time, or you become a different person from when you've first written it. So it's you become a bit more aware of, oh, actually, you know, I need to think of what I'm going to make it could take like 5 years, you know, to make. So you've got to think more long term, and that influences your decision on what you should make in a way, because if you're going to invest all this time into something, you want it to be really something that you feel as a filmmaker can like represents you, or it's something that you want to, you know, present to the world.
So, I mean, that's interesting, isn't it? Because all those years back, you made this short film, which, just going back to it, I guess the message feels quite bleak. It ends pretty badly, or fatalistically, or whatever you want to call it. How do you transcribe your desires and your achievements making that film, which is a short anyway, so I know it's a whole different ball game in terms of, you know, shorts getting programmed versus features. But do you feel that the journey you had, as you say, one that you were slightly more in control of and that was quicker, you know, got from point A to point Z in within a year type thing, meaning from your ideas to having it in festivals, and then your experience on the feature in terms of shaping your message or your attitude or your the thing you're putting out there in the world, do you think differently about your audience? You know, the people who are going to not just fund your film, but then buy into your film or program it, or but then the people who are going to watch the film, what you want out of that? Do you feel like you think about that more?
Yeah, I think I do think about that more, though. I don't know if that's a good thing or not. Like, you should be aware of the audience, but not think about it too much. Because sometimes you watch films and they can be a little bit like cynical, and that they're, you know, they're all kind of like riding this wave of, you know, what's the political, the, you know, what's the zeitgeist at the moment. And obviously by the time you make your film, that, you know, that's fallen out of fashion, so you shouldn't do that. And it's sometimes you feel like, oh, you know, there are certain films that, you know, that obviously just like play to certain festivals or play to certain audiences, and they can be a little bit too obvious. So, or sometimes you're aware of, like, because of your peers and you know what, you know, other people are making, so you know you don't want to make the same thing as like other people are making as well. So there are these kind of like pitfalls that you're aware of, but I think you need to like be confident and have like trust in your own voice and go for what really excites you as a filmmaker. I mean, that's what I've learned, and I think that's what I learned like in the writing process as well, is like, you know, make something that excites you. What do I want to see, and what do I what do I like?
I have had so many directors send me scripts, and I read it and I think, oh, that's really surprising. Would you go see this film? Oh, no, I wouldn't want to go see this film. And you think, why are you writing a film that you wouldn't want to go see? I just don't get it.
Yeah, it's weird. I had a friend and he was like, oh yeah, I think I'm going to write a horror film because people like horror films now. And he wrote the horror film, and there wasn't that excitement that the filmmaker really enjoys, like horror films.
So tell me something, leaping off of that, because you didn't say what your feature film was about, but what now, 2021, what's on your mind that you feel you want to, you know, are you wanting to make a Pride and Prejudice, or
Well, I mean, I think like with COVID's got me thinking of, I mean, what's apparent is that, you know, the people that are kind of like exposed, you know, it's exposed kind of like a lot of cracks within like the kind of like almost, you know, system that, you know, some people can kind of, you know, have got like a second home in the Cotswolds or something and can live there, while, you know, there are people that are on the front line, like, you know, like delivery drivers or, you know, people who are, you know, on buses and things like that. So I was writing something that was focusing on more on that kind of showing the like different worlds that we're living in, especially with, you know, delivery drivers. So I was writing something about like the gig economy, not just about that. I was just inspired by all these kind of like, I think just like all these like empty streets or empty spaces, especially like in the city of London. Yeah, well, this is about a drunk delivery driver. Yeah, and it's like three strikes, you're out kind of stuff. I'm quite interested in maybe pursuing like looking into that world again as well. But my feature film was actually set in Morocco. It was a road trip about a couple who looked to have an abortion on the black market. With that, they kind of like check into the hotel as man and wife, and they go for a backstreet abortion, and it's just about like the circumstances that they kind of like face, but it's also about like relationships. So it's almost like a two-hander where you just kind of like follow two people, and they fight and they make up and they fight and one runs away and they come back together. So it was more looking at human relationships.
I was going to ask you about if you had to remake this film now, your short film, what do you think you would do differently? Or do you think you just loved it as it was and you wouldn't touch it again?
Well, it's quite interesting because someone asked for it recently, because sometimes you still get people from like festivals or like, I think there was some like interesting like kind of like youth groups as well, like he wanted to see the film, and someone watched the film and said, oh, it was so relevant to like the world that we live in now. And it actually kind of it made me think that even though I made it, I think I shot it in like 2014, that actually a lot of the concerns or issues or that kind of like that simmering anger that underlies the character and the situation still exists, and it probably exists more that now than it did then, or it's more kind of like emphasized now. And I think what I like about the film from that point of view is that it presents that, but it doesn't try to hide that within like a sentimental narrative or you know, this kind of like personal story. It's more confrontational. And that's the thing that I like about the film, that, you know, even though it speaks to like different generations and it speaks to different people and it speaks to people from different backgrounds, or, you know, everyone can, or, you know, or when I took the film like abroad, like you could, it's got something universal that everyone can identify with, those struggles or not being heard, the almost like the teacher or the person who's trying to get them back into the working world, he's slightly like condescending in his tone, and it kind of lends itself to like situations like when you're at school. So you can actually take that situation and you can kind of like relate to it. Like, you don't have to be an ex-offender or be on the wrong side of the tracks, that, you know, you can interpret that situation in from a like the white collar world. Like, if you're like working in an office space, there's that like rhetoric of like change, which is quite hollow, that people kind of see through as well, or whether you take it like literally. So, you know, the central character in a way is like confused. It's you're receiving a lot of these messages, you know, is it my fault that I don't have a job? Is it society's fault? You know, what should I be doing? You know, it's like, how much personal responsibility do I take to the situation that I'm in? Or, you know, how do I break this kind of like cycle of violence, or, you know, this like habit that I've created?
Yeah. It feels so now. It really feels very appropriate, like, to be watching it now.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Before we finish, a few shout-outs. Glasgow Short Film Festival is made possible thanks to the generous support of Screen Scotland and Film Hub Scotland. This podcast was produced for us by Helena Rifai, with music by Lewis den Hertog. We'd love to hear your responses to this episode and our festival programme, so get in touch. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Glasgow Short. Enjoy the festival.